This audio was recorded on the 2010 Feminist Walking Tour on International Women's Day in Dublin. This section is the O'Connell Street stop. Sinead from Choice Ireland talks about the Ladies Land League and is followed by Alan from the WSM on the history of the X-Case protests and church power in Ireland.
Now, we talked a little bit about the women who took part in the 1916 Rising. And hopefully you can hear me over all the din. One of the earliest nationalist movements, organised nationalist movements in Ireland to include women was the Land League. In 1891, the Men's Land League, led by Charles Stewart Parnell and Michael Davitt, began to realise that their activities weren't going to be left unmonitored by the English for long. And sure enough, new anti-treason laws were brought in. The men were promptly rounded up and placed in Kilmainham Jail. Parnell's sisters, Annie and Fanny. Annie was a playwright and a poet. She wrote a song called Bring Home the Harvest, which was like the Irish Marseillaise. Annie did most of the fundraising for the Ladies Land League and really kept them in the dough when they were working. Offered to set up a Ladies Land League. Michael Davitt supported the idea, saying that in situations like this, women are often more terrible despots than men, suggesting that the women might go further even than the men. Men, as I said, were locked up. The Ladies Land League were left behind. They were given offices here on O'Connell Street, just further down in number 61, and very little instruction. So the women continued on with the mission of the men, except rather more militantly. They believed that withholding rent actually meant withholding rent. They believed that resisting landlords actually meant resisting. The Irish Viceroy had at one point met with Davitt and Parnell in prison and complained that these women they left behind had left the country infinitely more ungovernable. Within a year, the Ladies Land League had thousands of women members in over 500 branches around Ireland. They had made wooden shelters for tenants who'd been evicted from their homes. They'd collected huge amounts of money and distributed huge amounts of funds to evicted tenants. Years later, Parnell and Davitt and the leaders of the Men's Land League were released from prison. The Ladies Land League was subsumed in, and although Parnell did make a nod to their achievements, they were largely forgotten. Fanny hung herself and Anna wrote a play describing the events, The Tale of a Great Sham, and complained that the men's difficulty with women's involvement was that they had just simply done their job better than the men had ever could. The GPO on O'Connell Street has been a site for public resistance and public outcry over the last several hundred years in Ireland. The X case in 1992 was a case that gripped the nation. Demonstrations allowing the woman at the centre of the X case to travel for an abortion took place here on O'Connell Street. And to tell us a little bit about it is Alan Maximone, a veteran pro-choice activist who helped organise that rally on the day. Thank you.
Well, I guess some of you are going to have to suspend disbelief for a few minutes. A lot of people, probably under about 35, find it very difficult to get their heads around what sort of country Ireland was back in the 80s. After the anti-abortion referendum was won by the Catholic right in 83, they didn't stop there. They went on an offensive. The first significant thing was a year after that referendum, Eileen Flynn, a school teacher down in Wexford, was sacked for having a child outside marriage. Nothing else, that was it. Having a child outside marriage, sacked, and it was upheld by the courts. The following year, in 85, SPOC, the Society for the Protection of the Unborn Child, which was the main anti-choice group at the time, went off to the High Court seeking an order to close down open-line counselling up in Belvedere Place off Mountjoy Square and the Dublin Well Women's Centre because they were providing contact details for legal abortion services in Britain. Needless to say, SPOC got their court order. The giving of information about abortion services outside the country was made illegal. The courts declared, in fact, it was unconstitutional to do so. Then the floodgates really opened for the far right. Women's health books were taken off the shelves of public libraries in Dublin. Books which a lot of you will have seen and thought quite harmless, like Our Bodies, Ourselves and Every Woman. Completely taken off, nobody could see them. There were even a couple of cases of foreign telephone directories, London and Liverpool telephone directories, being held behind the counter in libraries where you'd have to go and specifically ask for them because young women had to be protected from seeing the possibility of a telephone number for a service overseas. It reaches probably its most ludicrous situation when one day the entire day's edition of the Guardian newspaper was seized from the Belfast to Dublin train because in its pages, page 93 or something, there was a tiny little ad for the Mary Stopes Clinic. A few years after that, no, it didn't get better. It got worse again. SPOC were back into the High Court, this time taking a case against the student unions in Trinity College and UCD and the National Student Organisation, USI, because in their welfare handbooks they'd put in the telephone number of an abortion helpline. While all this was happening, a small group of people, and I want to emphasise, a small group of people got together and formed the Abortion Information Campaign with the idea of publicly defying the ban on information, challenging the state to move against us on this issue. Every Saturday we were outside the GPO handing out leaflets with the banned telephone numbers, as well as, you know, the usual things of writing to the papers and so on. 1992, the 6th of February, small story in the Evening Herald. We followed up, we learnt that the Attorney General, Fianna Fáil's Harry Whelan, had just obtained a High Court injunction restraining a 14-year-old girl pregnant as a result of rape and reportedly suicidal from leaving the country. The injunction was confirmed a week later by senior judge of the High Court, Declan Costello, who confirmed the ruling and ordered that the girl and her parents were prohibited from leaving Ireland for a period of 9 months from this date. So the few of us who had been making some noise on the issue decided to hold a rally outside the GPO on the following Saturday. We hadn't a clue how many people would turn up. At that time, abortion was not an issue being discussed in Ireland. People just, you know, you just didn't talk about it. It was still a very emotive one. And indeed, most Saturdays, while we were leaving down the road there, we would end up getting digs in the head and that from Youth Defence. Though, we gave as good as we got. And at the end of the day, they didn't chase us off the streets. We removed them. On the Saturday, the dozen or so of us who were organising it met at lunchtime over there in Madigan's in North Earl Street. And we were discussing, will we get 100 people? Will we get 200 people? What do? Well, we'll just call it a rally. So if it's a small number, we don't have to go anywhere. It's just a street meeting. We came out of the pub, came across the road. There were people from where the spire is now down beyond the Larkin statue, from the GPO almost over to Cleary's. The most moderate estimates for the numbers that turned out that day was 10,000. Some of the media said it was up to 15,000. So it's quite amazing. And it wasn't just here. Around the country, smaller protests, but commensurate with the size of the towns, happened. And I particularly remember the teenage women in the convent schools in Cork and Waterford who walked out to join protests in their city centres. I say walked out, though in one school in Waterford, they climbed out. The nuns locked all the doors, so the girls went out the windows. Everything was changing at this stage. No longer was abortion some sort of abstraction where people talked about ensoulment and so on. It now had a face. There was a 14-year-old girl who had been interned in her own country by order of the government. Everything really had changed. Public opinion did an amazing shift. Within a matter of a few weeks, once there was a face on the issue, a lot of the people who had voted for the amendment in 83 started saying, but this isn't what we voted for. We didn't think it would be like this. And for the first time, there probably began a real debate about abortion, as opposed to the loony right, you know, throwing out nonsense about the abortion mills of England, grinding Irish children into, I don't know, some sort of sacrificial flower. And they used to come out with stuff like that. The government didn't know what to do. They didn't want this. It was quite embarrassing. They were afraid that if there wasn't a quick resolution, that the people on the streets would not only stay on the streets, their numbers would grow, and God knows what some of them might do. So the government went and they approached the girl's family and they pleaded with them, will you please go back to the court, seek a change in the ruling, and we, the government, will pay all your legal costs. Don't even discuss it. We'll cover everything. We want this sorted. The five Supreme Court judges who heard the appeal were not liberals. In fact, they were led by Hugh O'Flaherty, who had been Spock's legal representative in taking the student unions to court. Nevertheless, because of the informal pressure in the corridors of the Bar Library, the contact between government ministers and senior law officers, it was decided that girl had to be let go, that the public opinion had got too strong on the issue. The Supreme Court turned the constitutional amendment on its head. They ruled that she could leave the country. She could leave the country for the purposes of having an abortion. It went against all legal logic, but what it did demonstrate was the power that we have when ordinary people get together and make our voices heard. The X case then forced the government to run a new referendum where we were asked to vote on, should women have a right to travel outside the country? Yeah, amazing, you know. Something you would expect from the Middle Ages. Should women have a right to information? People voted yes to information, yes to the right to travel. And the government snuck a third one in, which tried to make, get rid of the legal ruling that if your life was in danger, even as a result of threatened suicide, that you would be entitled to an abortion. They want to overturn that to make it far more restrictive, basically pregnant suicide where you can just die. But people voted down the government's proposal to turn things even further backwards. The majority of voters, unlike in 1983, were no longer hoodwinked and fooled into believing like that abortion, it's just murder. Because clearly it wasn't for us. Once they looked at the issue, it wasn't. The government then promised that the result of the defeat of their proposals would be legislation allowing for, admittedly extremely restrictive, but nevertheless allowing for legal abortion services to be provided in Ireland. But it was a politician's promise. In the 18 years that have followed, despite the fact that Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Labour and the Greens have all been in power, not one of them has done anything to change the situation. We can't rely on politicians to do stuff for us, but we can force them into action. It was people power that won Miss X the right to travel to England, and when enough of us come together and we have sufficient determination, we'll get rid of that constitutional ban once and for all.
This audio was recorded and edited by Andrew Flood on the Feminist Walking Tour in Dublin. For more audio from the International Women's Day Walking Tours, go to http://anarchism.pageabode.com/cat/gender.